Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and today we're going to be talking about the glamorous world of silent movies and the pipe organ music that once accompanied them. We're joined by a pair of musicians of different generations who've been keeping pipe organs humming all around the Pacific Northwest. Dean Lemire is a composer, originally a classical pianist, now a jazz stylist. He's been the team organist for the Trailblazers basketball team and for the Winter Hawks hockey team, as well as the staff organist at Oaks Park Roller Rink in Portland. And you can see him at the historic Hollywood Theater in Portland, where he composes original scores and accompanies vintage silent films as a member of the Columbia River Theater Organ Society. And Andrew Dunning is a graduate student in earthquake geology and the host of a YouTube channel, Better Geology. His passion is tinkering with theater pipe organs. And in addition to repairing and maintaining them, he's played on instruments in venues around the country as part of the American Theater Organ Society's Summer Youth Adventure. Dean Lemire, Andrew Dunning, welcome to Words and Pictures.
Thank you.
So Dean and Andrew, give us a little bit of history about silent film, pipe organs, and how they happened to come together more than a century ago.
Well, at first it was pianos, or usually it was a church organist. They needed something to accompany these films. It wasn't, it's a misnomer that they were really silent. There's nothing silent about it. There's always something going on. I mean, there were people up singing sometimes, but orchestras would be hired, but they got very expensive. And a guy by the name of Robert Hope Jones, who ended up working for Wurlitzer, came up with an instrument that could take the place of an orchestra. Everything is at your fingertips, sound effects. I know you'd mentioned you were a son of a preacher. The difference between a theater organ and a church organ. Maybe Andrew, maybe you'd want to tell them a little bit about that.
There's definitely a difference of scale between theater organs and church organs, but I guess there are also significant differences in the technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The church organs are generally really good at only playing church music and maybe some classical literature, but on a theater organ, you can play all of it. You can do anything from, Bach through Beethoven, through Glenn Miller, and plenty of people play pop standards from today on big pipe organs, theater pipe organs in certain places. A lot of the, especially older church organs, are mechanically driven, but the theater pipe organs almost all were electro-pneumatic, where they were controlled by magnets and pouches of air. And oddly enough, the way that works out, you have almost an instant response between when you push the key and the pipe plays.
Yeah, I mean, a piano is considered a percussive instrument, but a pipe organ seems almost like a wind instrument.
Yeah, you have, thousands of individual pipes, each of which plays one note and only one note at only one volume. So it requires a lot of infrastructure. Pipe organs are incredibly inefficient things. There's always air leaking out. You have to pressurize the whole thing all the time to make it all work. But, the end result is that everything is very specific at doing one job, and it usually does that one job really well.
At the same time, it sounds like an organist, at least for theater organs, is almost like a one-man band. You can replace a full orchestra with just a pipe organ.
That's exactly why it was designed, so one guy can do it. Another easy way to look at it, for me, it's like comparing a Corvette to a Chevy sedan. It's fast, it's sleek. You've got a horseshoe console. It's ergonomic. It's got stop tabs instead of old draw pull knobs. It's fast. It's higher wind pressures. To use a 1920 word, it's just snazzier. It's I guess that would be a good term, but it replaced a complete orchestra. It has different sounds. It's got tremulance that you don't have on a classic or church organ. But yeah,
it's the result of that is that the tone tends to, it's really shimmery, especially, you know, if you use certain combinations of pipes in it, you get kind of a woo 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 thing going on. And actually the phrase "all the bells and whistles" comes from old theater organs because they've got all sorts of different percussion instruments and sound effects like bells and whistles.
Pull out all the stops.
It sounds like a really experienced operator can make a sustain, a decay, like some really interesting filigree out of the notes that come out of the organ.
The art is, it's like the color. The organ stops are the color. It's the paint. You can be technically play everything, but it's how you're going to paint it, what kind of effect you're wanting. Some organists have just mastered the sound of a dog barking or a guy snoring, but you can try that on a different pipe organ, not going to have the same effect. Each organ is its own living, it's almost like a living thing.
The way they sound and behave is so dependent on the room they're in. So you can take one organ in one theater that sounds amazing and is unparalleled, you move it to somewhere else, a smaller theater, and it doesn't sound as good. It happens all the time. Or at least it sounds different.
You know, I'm thinking of the electronic keyboards and synthesizers that started appearing in the 60s and 70s. And it sounds like pipe organs were almost the precursor to that.
They were.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's only two or three instruments that are native to America, were the banjo, the harmonica, and the theater pipe organ. And the big thing that differentiates a theater organ is percussion instruments. You have drums, you have tuned percussions like sleigh bells, tuned sleigh bells, glockenspiels.
Xylophone.
Yeah.
Now, one of the differences, one of the big differences between the modern electronic keyboards and the pipe organs is the pipe organs, they weigh tons. They have all kinds of heavy equipment in there.
You got a blower that's 15, what would you say, Andrew, 15 ton? I don't know how big our blower is.
It's probably 1,500 pounds. It's a 100-year-old lump of 1920s electronic technology. It's built to last. They're very heavy.
Mm-hmm. Now, Andrew, you're a young guy, and this is an old technology. It's a technology that some people would say is dying out, and you are heavy into the idea of going in there and keeping these things running.
Yeah, I am. I think it's not necessarily a dying art. It's just that, you know, there's not a lot of places to put these things, and a lot of people just don't know about them. I mean, most of my friends had never heard of theater pipe organs before they knew me, and, you know, now they say, oh, wow, these are really cool. I never knew a pipe organ could do that. That's the most common thing a theater organist hears. And I really think that, you know, a lot of people only play 1920s, 30s music on these, but, you know, there's no reason to kind of pigeonhole it to that genre. It plays everything. And that's the thing I love most about it. It can make just about any sound you want it to. And I love making it sound like things that aren't pipe organs.
You know, there's, until you have the venue, you know, their venue is for silent films, and it's really taken on a new life with the Hollywood. It's been really wonderful having them as a partner, because where else can we regularly feature these silent films, which really feature this fabulous instrument?
Now, we're talking about the Hollywood Theater in Portland, which has regular screenings of silent films with the pipe organ, the resonant pipe organ.
Correct. And Pipe Organ Pictures is one of the signature series in the, and it's the Hollywood really supports us with this. We've put the organ in there, and that's another whole topic. But to have a venue like that is amazing. It's the last theater organ in a theater in Portland. And one time there was like 40 movie theaters in the heyday, but they're all gone. And it's getting this interest in silent films. It's bringing them to life again.
As far as I know, the Hollywood Theater has the most active silent movie schedule in the country. Certainly with a pipe organ.
Yeah, so there is indeed a screening coming up for our listeners in Portland. Let's hear about this classic silent film from the 1920s.
So we got a real rare one coming up. It's our first time ever screening a Greta Garbo in Flesh and the Devil from 1926. This was called one of her best film, if not the best. She loved this film because it had her favorite director and her favorite cameraman, which she called Lensman. The cinematography is just knockout. It's gorgeous black and white. She was always kind of mysterious because she was ultra private. In 1930, when she actually was in her first talkie, the headlines were reading, "Garbo Speaks." And you can imagine, you know, if you had like Sandra Bullock or Meryl Streep and you'd followed and you'd never heard him speak. So it was a big deal.
So one of the things about silent film that made it such a phenomenon was that it wasn't constrained by language. Silent films, you know, Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, Greta Garbo, these could be seen all over the world with different intertitle cards, and nobody experienced a language barrier.
No. It's funny, now we're making a big deal about closed caption, and gee, is the film closed caption? Well, these are the original closed caption because they are in the intertitles, and it was all done with acting, true acting and motion and facial expressions. Guys like Buster Keaton prided himself for using the least amount of intertitles in a film. It just depends what fits the film, but a lot of these actors and actresses, some of them didn't transition into talkies very well because the beauty in what they did was in the acting. And then the black and white cinematography it's an art to film in black and white, which color is all forgiving. So you really see an art form in a really good silent film.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're talking today about silent movies and the music that accompanies them. Our guests are Dean Lemire and Andrew Dunning, composers, musicians, and tinkerers with the Columbia River Theater Organ Society. Dean, you've composed original music for silent films. And what cues do you take when you're working on a piece for a film?
The directors of these films had cue sheets as ideas. You know, when I play film, sometimes I like to go out of my way to try to create what would it, if somebody was still alive from the 20s, they could walk into the theater and that's what you heard. Because, you know, people have taken Jimi Hendrix and put it as soundtracks to silent films, and it's okay, but it's the organist is not the feature person, it's the film. I read in an old book once, it was put out in the early 20s, you know, it was put out for church organists, hey, here's how you work in these movie theaters. You can change a movie completely. You know, if you play the wrong music, you can play a popular tune in a film, and that takes the audience's mind totally off the film. But it's the emotions that come out. Hey, it's love. It's the chase. It's the villain. It's evil. It's the grandiose. And you just create different themes for those. And doing it at the wrong time, you might have problems. Or your foot hits the gong instead of the train, the train whistle. It's all coordinated to be part of the film.
Well, Andrew, we mentioned that you've been on the summer youth adventure for the American Theater Organ Society, And there's theater organs all around the country. I'm familiar with a few of them. The pipe organ at the Music Box Theater in Chicago, for example. How many of them are there out there? And has there been a bit of a revival in recent years?
That's hard to say. I would say there's a few hundred theater organ installations around the country, both real with pipes, and there's virtual and digital ones as well that usually sound pretty good. There's a few dozen, definitely less than 70, that are in their original locations, in their original theaters. Has there been a revival recently? I don't know. In the last couple of decades, there's been a little bit of a slump as a lot of the old guard has, shall we say, phased out of the theater organ world. It was really big in the 70s and 80s, where a lot of organs went in all over the place. And I think recently, in the last 10 years or so, at least in Oregon, there's, I think, three theater organs projects I can think of right now that are being worked on outside of Portland, all around the state. So I like to think there's a new crowd starting to come in, both people my age and people a little bit older who are just interested in the nostalgia and history that these instruments create.
Yeah, there's something about the Pacific Northwest, and I mean the Columbia River Theater Organ Society. This isn't just Portland. It's not just a Hollywood theater. You know, it might be the climate of the Pacific Northwest. I'm not sure, but a lot of coastal movie theaters hung on to their pipe organs for a long time. At the Bob White Theater in Portland, there were five pipe organs being stored there. So obviously there are people who are passionate about these things.
Those, unfortunately, it's like Andrew referred to, a lot of the older guys who'd grown up, it actually had seen these in the theaters or had access before they left the theater. They're passing on. So that enthusiasm, you're not seeing people install these in their homes anymore. They're just too much. They need a venue. But on the other side of the coin, there's instruments in theaters that don't have a Hollywood theater that is really gung-ho about doing silent film. So they sit there unused, just on occasion. It's just the stars and planets just lined up for theater organ and Columbia River and Hollywood. It's a really good thing we got.
I'm thinking, are you and your colleagues always ready to jump in the van whenever you get a call? If you get the bat signal from somebody with a pipe organ somewhere, it needs some fixing or whatever?
Once in a while, it does happen. Though usually during the silent films, I'm ready to jump up and pull a pipe if one of them gets stuck playing or anything else that comes up, it happens.
A lot of the parts we search out, we end up with 90-year-old parts. Sometimes we have to restore some. One of the sets of pipes that we have was actually in Mary Pickford's personal residence organ down in Hollywood. Actually, wow. Our whole set of bass pipes came from her. We call them the Mary Pickford pipes. They all have a history. Andrew, I didn't ask you yet, but you're going to be there next Saturday. He's like the savior. We get a stuck pipe.
What happens with a stuck pipe? What do you have to take it out if it's holder
so
and
I have
blow
to,
on it?
I have to go out the theater, into the backstage door, up the scary 100-year-old ladder, into the pipe organ chamber, find the stuck pipe out of the hundreds that are in there. And usually I'll just pull it out so that it stops whistling and then shove something down into the toe hole so that you can't hear the wind whistling out of it.
That's some chewing gum or something?
I usually use felt or paper, but... and then sometimes it's an easy problem to fix and I can fix it right there and put the pipe back. And sometimes you have to leave it off for a while and fix it later.
And then all the pipes are playing at once. You're not just hearing one pipe. If he's up there fixed, trying to pull it, but that's, as you know, Andrew, that's almost deafening when you have all these pipes, they're playing at full volume. They're all controlled by a shutter That's what gives the volume. It's those pipes are playing at full pressure, full volume.
I always wear ear protection in the chamber. It's vital.
Like you said, this is mechanical equipment, and yeah, they fall apart. They leak, they separate. When you're going in there, I suppose there's rust, there's water damage, there's just age and drying out, that sort of thing.
Sometimes. The Hollywood Theater is really a new installation. It's only been fully functional as a pipe organ for a few years. And so when we were putting the current pipework in, we completely cleaned out the chamber, we painted the walls, we fixed the floor. And so the stuff that does go wrong is, you know, sometimes dust gets in a piece of the action, the mechanics, or a magnet starts leaking, you know, little things like that. But I have been at other theater organ installations around the country. Famously, the Fox Theater in Detroit, the biggest of the movie palaces from the 1920s, still has its original big Wurlitzer pipe organ in it. And the ceiling, the plaster ceiling in one of the pipe chambers collapsed. And so that chamber is now not functional.
Wow.
Things like that do happen. Not at the Hollywood, though.
During the COVID pandemic, a lot of small movie theaters around the country were shuttered and they fell into disrepair. And in some cases, irreplaceable equipment, including pipe organs, just did not survive the shutdown.
Well, we went in, I mean, I know I went in probably half a dozen times and fired up the organ and played it. And the Hollywood did with all their other movie equipment too, because you don't use it, you'll lose it. But a lot of theaters didn't even know if they were going to survive. I got several phone calls of pipe people wanting to get rid of pipe organs and like, well, we don't know. There's no venue that wants it. The venues didn't even know if they were going to stay alive.
So this was, you were getting calls from around the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, no, this is what, I was getting calls from Canada and other places that because they got a hold of us because they knew, well, hey, the Hollywood Theater is successful. Maybe they know of another theater. Well, no, we really don't. It's like, you know, I know a lot of empty theaters, but there's just no places to put them. There's lots of pipe organs, not a real place to put them. And it's expensive. And the manpower to put these in it's a dying art.
I agree. But I don't think that's because people don't like them. But if you go to a theater manager somewhere and you say, well, yeah, I want to put a theater pipe organ into your theater, he's going to say, that's the lamest thing I've ever heard. Because most people haven't been exposed to the theater organ. They don't know what it can do. They just think, oh, yeah, you'll play Everything's Coming Up Roses and then go down on the lift. But no, you can play a full orchestral score and accompany any movie you want or do anything else.
What's really funny is I know a guy, can't get him to go. He says, why would I want to go see a silent movie with an organ playing? I says, until you experience it, you don't know. Because you watch a silent film on YouTube, it is boring as hell.
It's hard.
And if you do the wrong accompaniment to it, you can't get into it. The best success, when somebody said, Dean, I just love that film. Unfortunately, I didn't really listen to you. That's it. That's what it's all about, is you did the job. Because nobody walks out of a movie. Who do you know walks out? Oh, that was a great soundtrack.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, Dean, because the first time I saw Nosferatu at the Hollywood, you played it. This was, I don't know, November 2015, I think it was. And I went up to you after the movie and I was like, Dean, this is really cool. How can I get involved in this? I like, you know, I always liked pipe organs and organ music, but I never really thought about the theater organ much until I experienced it in that setting. And it's really something else. It's like nothing else. It's really cool.
You mentioned Nosferatu. Well, we're going to be doing that. It's the 100th anniversary this year, 1922 it was made. So we're going to be doing that in November at our Thanksgiving weekend show.
And like Nosferatu the vampire, when Andrew came up, you said, ah, fresh young blood.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, oh yeah.
I'm basically the only one who can wiggle into the tiny spaces to maintain the instrument.
So, Andrew, you were mentioning the rumble of the organ, the bass. I mean, it beats out any subwoofer. And you being a graduate student in earthquake geology, that must appeal to you in a whole different way.
Yeah. there's certain places, in, especially in the Hollywood theater, where you can sit, where all of the bass just kind of gets funneled. And you feel it in your gut, and the chairs rattling. You can hear fixtures in the theater rattling, and it's really cool. I mean, we've got a set of big pipes called diaphones, and they were actually later repurposed by the Coast Guard as foghorns. And so these are basically giant tuned foghorns, and they're the real big noisemakers. They move a lot of air when they play, and they rattle every single thing in that auditorium. And when you're sitting there, and then everything around you starts playing when Dean hits a note in the low range, it's a very special experience that you really can't quite get anywhere else. And being an enthusiast of earthquakes, I do definitely enjoy a little bit of rattle and rolling and rumbling.
Do you remember a place called Earthquake Ethel's in Portland? It was built by the owners of the Organ Grinder, which was a pizza place on 82nd that had a huge pipe organ. And they capitalized on that rumble. And every on the hour, they used to have an earthquake, and they set up these big speakers. It would just rattle the hell out of it. But there is a rumble. I'll do that, you know, when I play like 2001, it just starts out, and that's all you'll hear, the rumble, and you hear it shaking. And, you know, right when we got the organ complete, he says, well, is it going to be loud? I said, well, you just watch for the plaster coming off the ceiling. Well, but it's got power. It's movement of air. It was the first stereo, too, because you have divided chambers. You'd have left and right, so you could get some stereophonic effect.
Yeah, the pipe organ that you still play at the Oaks Park roller rink, that place is over a century old. Oaks Park is like a time capsule, an amusement park from our great grandparents' day.
My grandmother was there on opening day when John Philip Sousa was playing in like 1905. She's a little girl here in Portland. It's just steeped in history. The building itself has had other older pipe organs. The rink is that old. It's very old. It's got 55-gallon drums strapped underneath the Michigan maple floor. So when it floods, they chainsaw around the floor, and it raises up in like 1964 flood and the 1947. And
the 1996 flood. It comes unmoored from the surface of the park, and it floats around. So
they have to cut the sprinkler system, the piping, and they got to do some things. They've got scuba divers down there, but the organ is actually, the console has had water come up into the console area, but it's managed to save all the other relays. And of course the pipes were safe where they are.
Wow.
It's just an interesting place.
Yeah, it's, I guess it just sort of got forgotten during the right period when other amusement parks were being knocked down, and it just avoided urban renewal or whatever.
They had an owner that was just, he was adamant, and he made sure it couldn't, he made it a nonprofit. The city wanted to take it and put, of all things, a mall there or something that would, or apartment living, but it's just a beautiful thing. There's another rarity besides the Hollywood is to have Oaks Park there. It's just a rarity. You'd never have that today.
Right along the Willamette River with these, you know, million-dollar views.
Yes. You know, there were like 500 roller rinks at one time. Oaks Park is now the last one in the world. It was the biggest and the last. They all just disappeared or went out of favor, but Oaks Park, we've got kind of a jewel in Portland to have that. It's the largest pipe organ ever put in a roller rink. And it came out of the Broadway Theater in downtown Portland. And so it's from 1926, the same year the Hollywood opened. So that thing's been playing almost daily since it was put in there in 1955. But I kind of played there since I was 17, and it's just a neat, really neat thing.
So what happens when these pipe organ owners can't find a taker for this historic piece of equipment?
Well, that's a big problem because it costs a huge amount of money to store these things. I got a call from a guy back in Virginia that, do you have any idea? A pristine theater organ. It's just pristine. If you had it, you could put it in and get it going, but just to move it is a Herculean task. The cost of shipping, it all has to be crated in wood crates. It's a horrendous cost. And then the man hours to install it. It's plumbing. You got to be an electrician. You got to be a carpenter. You got to be a musician. You got to be able to tune it. It's a skill set that's just really hard. And with COVID, nobody's wanting to even go in and do anything. But yeah, there's a lot of them have gone, unfortunately, to the dump. It's really sad.
Wow. So you have, you've done a lot of travel. You've done some international travel as well.
Did a lot with USO show, international.
You worked with Bob Hope, I believe.
We were the backup group for Bob Hope, but we'd land on an aircraft carrier we'd take off while he landed. They wouldn't put us on at the same time. We did performance benefits, concerts in army hospitals and things.
And you've done some big band jazz. Do you have any recordings out there that people can access?
Not really. I just played with a lot of local, done a few gigs with local people, do some things with Mel Brown around town. But it lends itself well to theater organ. You know, when I play at Oaks Park, which I do occasionally. In the last couple of years, I don't do it as much. I'm going to start doing it a little bit more, but with, you know, our films coming back with Aurora, I'm just doing more at the Hollywood.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And we've been talking today about silent movies and the music that accompanies them. Our guests have been Dean Lemire and Andrew Dunning, composers, musicians, and tinkerers with the Columbia River Theater Organ Society. Dean and Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you. See everybody on the 26th of March. Get your ticket for the Hollywood.
And that is, again, Greta Garbo in Flesh and the Devil.
Yes. Fantastic film. It's quite an experience if you haven't been to one of our films.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out about other events or about pipe organ pictures, where would they look?
You can look on the Columbia River Theater Organ Society website, crtos.org, or we have a Facebook page. Look us up on Facebook, and at the Hollywood website, we're in there for current film ticketing.
Well, thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of this show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @wordsandpicture.